All right, so we are bounding further into the book of Genesis today. If you've been with us for the last 3 weeks, we spent 3 weeks in Genesis chapter 17, and if you've been waiting for that to end, today you're in luck, because we're moving on to chapter 18 in the book of Genesis in this series called The Crossover, looking at the life and times of Abram, who became Abraham, asking God, what can we learn from his life, from his interactions with God? How can we see ourselves there? How can we learn to be people who have crossed over because of what the cross has ultimately done for us? And today, we're going to look at an episode in Abraham's life where he has to entertain some unexpected guests. We'll find Abraham underneath those great trees of Mamre, where we last left him, still waiting there, still childless, he and Sarah together, even though God has promised and promised and promised again. And you have to wonder if they're now sitting there in that sort of desert area, wondering, how long will God be silent? When might he speak again? And if we listen to the passage today, we will see God speaking. Genesis chapter 18, starting in verse 1. The Lord appeared to Abraham near the great trees of Mamre while he was sitting at the entrance to his tent in the heat of the day. Abraham looked up and saw three men standing nearby, and when he saw them, he hurried from the entrance of his tent to meet them and bowed low to the ground. He said, "If I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, do not pass your servant by. Let a little water be brought, and then you may all wash your feet and rest under this tree. Let me get you something to eat, so you can be refreshed, and then go on your way, now that you have come to your servant." "Very well," they answered. "Do as you say." So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah. "Quick," he said, "get three sihas of the finest flour and knead it and bake some bread." And then he ran to the herd and he selected a choice tender calf and gave it to a servant who hurried to prepare it. And then he brought some curds and milk and the calf that had been prepared and set these before them. And while they ate, he stood near them under a tree. "Where is your wife Sarah?" they asked him. "There in the tent," he said. Then one of them said, "I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son." Now Sarah was listening at the entrance to the tent, which was behind him, and Abraham and Sarah were already very old, and Sarah was past the age of childbearing. So Sarah laughed to herself and thought, "After I am worn out and my Lord is old, will I now have this pleasure?" Then the Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh and say, 'Will I really have a child now that I am old?' Is anything too hard for the Lord? I will return to you at the appointed time next year, and Sarah will have a son." Sarah was afraid, so she lied and said, "I didn't laugh." But he said, "Yes, you did laugh." If you remember from last week, all this talk about laughter is sort of a forecasting of the birth of Isaac, whose name means he laughs. And so as she says, "I'm not laughing," she's actually speaking the name of this boy that is to come just a short time. Unexpected guests. I'm sure we've all had some experience with unexpected guests, probably, even if it's just those telemarketing phone calls that somehow always seem to come when you're trying to eat dinner. So even if it's not somebody at the door, it's the ringing of the phone. But maybe it is somebody at the door. Maybe it's a pop-in friend who happens to just be in the neighborhood, or maybe surprise guests who show up just in time for dinner and you start to panic and go. That's the sound of panicking, by the way. I'm just going to not move this arm. That will work. So the sound of the panicking, do we have enough food and how can we make more? Or maybe you've actually had some unexpected overnight guests show up and just kind of be there and need a place and I was thinking about that as I was typing this up, thinking of the movie Christmas Vacation, where Uncle Eddie just kind of rolls in the RV and expects that it's going to be okay if he just hangs out for a while. So whatever it is, phone calls, pop-in visitors, unexpected dinner guests, we all have some experience with what it's like to have unexpected visitors in our lives. The thing is, with the advent of modern hotels, we've stopped being as easily hospitable as we once were. Generations ago, 50, 60, 70 years ago, and especially hundreds and thousands of years ago, people were much more interested and willing and flexible and glad to have others come and stay with them while they happened to be in town. And in Abraham's day, that's definitely the case. Right? It wasn't an inconvenience. If we read the text, we understand Abraham understands this to be an honor to have these unexpected visitors arrive. And don't forget, as we unfold the scene that we just read about, don't forget it's really important that we as the readers know from the beginning that the Lord is present somehow within these visitors. But Abraham doesn't know at the beginning. And it's interesting to watch him maybe slowly understand that these three men, as he calls them at the beginning, may not be exactly what they seem by the end of the story. So let's dig into it. The first thing we see is Abraham being one who serves selflessly. Selfless service. He assumes the role of a servant, placing these three strangers above himself, showing them honor and respect. To him, they are not inconvenient intrusions into life. They are a blessing, an honor. He says to them, "I am your servant. How can I best accommodate you?" Reminds me of Romans chapter 12, verse 3, where Paul says, "By the grace given to me, I say to every one of you, don't think of yourself more highly than you ought to." Abraham certainly didn't. He looked at these three visitors and he raised them up and said, "I will consider you more highly than I even consider myself." We need to understand that in that day, travelers would begin a journey like this early in the morning around sunrise, when it was light enough to see and to be safe, but yet still at the beginning of the cooler part of the day. And they would get as far as they possibly could until about midday, when the sun really started to bake, and then they would try to find a place where they could rest and find some hospitality. And that's where Abraham comes in. This would also be the time of day that Abraham would have just finished whatever his morning labor would have been. Because it's getting to be afternoon, the hottest part of the day. Notice Abraham is at the entrance of his tent. He's not out and about trying to get things done, because it is warm out by this point. Abraham is ready to grab a glass of lemonade, kick back in his hammock, and enjoy a nap for the afternoon. All his hard work is done. And isn't it true that many times it is when we least want to express grace to someone for some reason that we are called to do so? The last thing Abraham wants right now is to entertain guests, you would think, at least with our modern mindset. He is ready to kick back and relax after a long and tough morning of labor in the sun. And now it's the hottest part of the day. The last time of day he wants to run around in the sun, and yet Abraham considers it an honor. We can see it in his words and in his actions that he desires to serve. We're told that he hurries over to them, that he bows down low, an expression saying that his head was as close to the ground as humanly possible to show them the reverent respect he had for these strangers who have come to visit him. And to encourage them to stay, Abraham downplays what he has in mind. He says, "We'll just bring a little bit of water, just enough to sprinkle on your feet to get them clean. And we'll get something for you to eat." Actually, the original Hebrew says, just a morsel, just a crumb of bread. It's almost as if he's saying, "Listen, you're not inconveniencing me at all. Stick around here, just a little water for your feet, just a bite or two of bread. Be refreshed and be on your way." Not only would their feet be dirty from the travel and sandals throughout this desert atmosphere, but I was reading this remembering how it would have been such a relief to have the cold water on your feet, because walking across the sand, your feet would be roasting by this amount of time, right? I mean, just imagine being on the beach. just that short walk from where you need to, from where you are to where you need to get to near the water's edge, and you have to walk across the sand that never gets touched by the water, and it is so hot. I love the beach, I really do. Not as much as my wife, but I do love going. But that's one of my least favorite parts, is the walk from like the parking area to where you need to be, because you walk across the sand that never gets cooled down. Can you imagine doing it for hours and then showing up how that cool water would feel on your feet? And Abraham says, just a little water, just a morsel of bread, stick around, right? Wash your feet, enjoy just a simple meal. And I read that last night, and I'm always looking for Jesus when I read the Old Testament, and I see Jesus here. Someone who insists that his guests have their feet washed, who insists that they share in a simple meal together to be refreshed, because the journey ahead is going to be difficult. Jesus at that Last Supper does it. He washes the feet of his disciples. He elevates them above himself, even though he is the great one. He feeds them bread and wine, and he knows that the journey ahead is going to be difficult. He refreshes them for what lies ahead. So Abraham has these visitors show up, and he gets them to stay by saying, just a morsel of bread, just a little sprinkle of water, and they agree. And as soon as they say yes, we'll stick around, Abe gets busy. He gets busy preparing what isn't quite a morsel of bread. It's much more than that. He is going to exceed the expectations that he has put out there. He puts the low expectations out, knowing, I think, in his brain that he has much more planned for them. Do you see the passion with which he moves in the passage? We're told that he hurries to Sarah, that when speaking with her, he says, quickly, get this bread ready. And then he runs to the herd of animals, and he gives this choice animal to the servant who hurries to prepare it. It's boom, 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 boom. Abraham wants it ready well, and wants it ready now, because he so values this place of service he enjoys, extending hospitality to these three strangers. We're told that Abraham had bread baked of the finest flour. He chose the choice calf, and he served curds and milk. Which, I don't know about you, but I read that phrase, curds and milk, and I immediately think of Little Miss Muffet who sat on a tuffet, because curds and whey is the only thing that comes to mind with curds. But actually, curds and milk in that day was a really rich, almost yogurt-like delicacy that was made with milk fat. It was very rich. It's something you saved only for really special occasions. So Abraham is pulling out all the stops. The finest flour, the choice calf. How much flour? Well, in our measurements today, if we translated it over, it would be 36 pounds of flour for three people, right? Above and beyond. Three people. Now listen, I like my bread as much as anybody, and I know I'm not supposed to. Bread's bad for, I don't care, I'm going to eat my bread. But 36 pounds of flour to make bread for three people, that is overboard. And not only that, he chooses a calf. For three people, he could have chosen a goat or a lamb. It would have been more than enough meat. They are going to need some serious doggy bags and to-go containers when this is all over, because there is going to be way too much food, exceeding expectations. Reminds me of Ephesians chapter 3, reflecting the character of God. To him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine, according to his power at work within us, to him be glory in the church and in Christ Jesus throughout all generations, forever and ever. Amen. That's the kind of God that we serve, a God who goes above and beyond, who pours out more than we could ever ask or expect or imagine. But there's another layer to this finest flour and the choice animal. Because if you continue reading the Old Testament, you get to some of the commands of the religion. You get to some of the temple commands and some of the ways that they did things. And you soon find out that it is the choice flour that is used to make what's called the bread of presence. This bread that sits in the temple and is always in the presence of God. Almost this holy bread that sits and soaks in God's presence. And not only that, but it's only the choice animals, only the best that were allowed to be laid on that altar in the form of a sacrifice. So what does this mean? I think this extra layer, as we read it today, we can understand that even without knowing it, Abraham is making a proper offering in the presence of God himself. I mean, yes, he's making an offering to his guests and his visitors, but by doing so, there's this layer that's happening where he is making an offering to God, the best of the best being given to his guest is somehow reflecting the best being given to God as well. And it brought me to this question, this conclusion that troubled me, and I would like to trouble you today with it as well. How many opportunities do we miss to make a beautiful offering to God and to one another because we're too busy or too fearful or too distracted or too polarized to be generous and hospitable with one another? How many times? How many times in our busyness, in our polarization, in our fear of the other, how many times have we missed out on opportunities to present an offering to someone else and thereby also present an offering to God himself? I mean, Hebrews 13 reminds us, don't forget to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing so, some people have shown hospitality to angels without even knowing it. How many missed opportunities? I kind of crystallized it down to this. It was actually in the shower this morning. I think really clearly in the shower, and I don't know why, but it's not on the screen. But this is what I would say to sum it all up. When we share our space and our stuff, something sacred shines through the moment. When we share our space and our stuff, something sacred shines through in that moment. And it does for Abraham, because he pours out all of this blessing and honor to his guests. But that's not the end of the story, because Abraham also receives blessing in this process, a return of blessings. It's not why he does it, but it's a byproduct of what happens. I think it happens with us as well. Often when we are willing to give ourselves openly and genuinely to hospitality, we find that we are also blessed in the end. I don't know if it's happened with you. I know it's happened with me. When you think you're the person giving and sacrificing and creating an atmosphere and a culture for blessing, and then the event, the time together takes place, and you end up feeling like you were just as blessed as the person you were trying to bless in the process. Abraham genuinely wants to be an avenue of blessing for these visitors, these strangers who have showed up, but we see that he receives blessing in return. In Abraham's day, one of the ways that these guests would give back to the host is in conversation. It was kind of expected as they were enjoying the meal that maybe they would share, where are they going, which we'll get to next week, or what are their plans, or what have they seen so far in the journey. So when the conversation begins with Abraham, that's their way to sort of give back in this moment. And I think we see, starting in verse 9, that Abraham begins to understand that these are not ordinary visitors. Because what's the first thing that they say to him? Where's your wife, Sarah? And Abraham, all he can get out in response is, she's over in the tent. And I wonder if he has a shortened response, because in the moment he's going, wait a second. How do you know I have a wife? And how do you know her name? So I wonder if maybe all he could get out is that she's in the tent. Just right back there. Please don't hurt me. I mean, because now you have people who you don't know and you don't think they know you, and they know you and they know your wife and they know your wife's name. So Abraham says, well, she's over in the tent. These are not ordinary visitors. So then they go ahead and they reaffirm that promise of a son, a promise that's been stated multiple times, a promise Abraham just recently heard. But you know who didn't hear it recently? It's Sarah. And this time, it's for Sarah to hear. And don't underestimate what this means. It's a beautiful picture of God speaking to both parties. Because in this day, in this culture, in this context, women did not mean much. It would be expected that God would speak to Abraham about this son and then say, by the way, tell your wife. But not this God. This God says, I want to speak to both parties. I want them both to hear from my voice the promise that I have for both of them. And so the promise is given again. And the promise is heard by Sarah, and clearly the promise is too much to believe. Abraham and Sarah in this passage, in this short passage, are described really clearly. It says they are very old, they are worn out, and Sarah is well past the age of childbearing. See, what started as just a barrenness problem is now a biological impossibility problem. Sarah has aged so much that she simply knows not only is it beginning to look hopeless, it's moved from hopeless to impossible. It's no wonder she laughs. A child? God, I am so far past being even hopeful anymore because now it's impossible. And that's when we arrive at the climax of this entire scene in verse 14. Because we're told that the Lord speaks, that Yahweh speaks, and what does he say? Is anything too hard for the Lord? Is anything too hard for the Lord? And now we see that Sarah starts to understand this is not an ordinary person with which I'm speaking because she hides the truth in her fearfulness. Now, I didn't laugh. It was the camel back there behind the tent. That wasn't me. She knows these are not ordinary visitors now. This is someone special speaking a word of blessing over her that seems too much to believe. And really, this is the key question of their entire story thus far. Are there some things that are too exceptional, too wondrous, too marvelous, too beyond the ordinary even for God? Is anything too hard for God? And I think it's a reminder even for us today. Are you ready to give up on someone or something? Please don't. Not yet. Because the answer to this rhetorical question, is anything too hard for God? The answer is no. Nothing is too hard. And so there's this creation of space. And I love it that it's a question. God could have simply said, nothing is too hard for me, but it's a question. Is anything too hard? Because this question gives space for faith once again to be exercised by Abraham and by Sarah. I'm going to close reading from something, a commentary I read this week. I kept reading this. I'm like, ooh, that's good. I'm going to use that. And I kept reading. I'm like, oh, I'm going to use that too. So I want to read to you this longer quote because it's a beautiful way to bring this story to a close in this moment of faith, because this is nothing less than the gospel being presented to Abraham and Sarah. Is anything too hard for the Lord? Once again, this story shows what a scandal and difficulty faith is. And I love this part. Faith is not a reasonable act which fits into the normal scheme of life and perception. The promise of the gospel is not a conventional piece of wisdom that's easily accommodated into everything else. Embrace of this radical gospel requires shattering and discontinuity. Abraham and Sarah have by this time become accustomed to barrenness. They are resigned to their closed future. They're accepting that hopelessness is normal. The gospel promise does not meet them in receptive hopefulness, but in resistant hopelessness. And the story embodies a statement of irony, for the total Abraham and Sarah story is about a call that's embraced. Well, in the central narrative, the call here is not embraced, it's rejected because it's nonsense. And indeed, if nothing new can intrude, if newness has to be conjured up from the present realities, then it is indeed nonsense. Is anything impossible for the Lord? It's a question that's meant to refute and dismiss the protests from this hopeless couple. And the refutation isn't stated as a proposition or an assertion or even a proclamation, but it's stated as a question. And it comes as a question because the gospel requires a decision. And that decision can't be given from above. It must come from Abraham and Sarah. It is the question around which this confrontation revolves. It's an open question. It's a question that waits for an answer. And it's the question which resurfaces over and over again everywhere in the Bible. And we have to say that it's the fundamental question every human person has to answer. And how we answer this question determines everything else. If we answer the question, yes, some things are too hard or impossible for God, then what we've done is not yet confessed God as truly God. We've not conceded the radical freedom to God. We've determined to live, and I love this part, in a closed universe where things are stable and reliable and hopeless. But on the other hand, if the question is answered, no, nothing is impossible for God, then that's an answer which so accepts God's freedom that the self and the entire world are fully entrusted to Him and no one else. It's a question we can't answer lightly or easily. The story hopes that we answer and yield to this one, the initiative for our lives, and let our lives flow from our own hands into His, believing with faith that nothing is impossible for God. So just a couple questions for us to grab a hold of as we finish our time together thinking about what we've heard and read and understood. Here's the first one. What kinds of things are you likely to label as too hard for the Lord? And I want you to take this time of silent reflection in just a moment and confess those to God. God, where have I put you in a box? Where have I said you can't come this far? What kinds of things have I said, no, that's simply not possible, too wondrous, too marvelous, too unrealistic? And then here's the second thing. Ask God to reveal a way for you to show genuine, vulnerable, open, other-oriented hospitality to another person sometime this week, just one. Open yourself up and say, God, show me someone, show me a way that I can practically open myself, maybe my home, maybe just my resources, maybe just my time in order to extend hospitality to someone else. In order that they may feel blessed, that I may be blessed in the process, but more than that, that you may have an opportunity to speak so that we can hear you. So take a moment or two if you want to pray. Close your eyes, bow your head. If you just want to read through those words, it's my hope and prayer that the Spirit will stir within you today, and then I'm going to close us in prayer in just a moment or two.